They called it the Pussy Pact, a secret sisterhood of four women, bound by vengeance, manipulating powerful men with sex, strategy, and silence. But when one of them goes rogue, everything unravels. Betrayal cuts deep, alliances shatter, and the hunters become the hunted. What starts as revenge turns into psychological warfare, and the quietest one, the one they underestimated, rises from the ashes to burn it all down. Power, sex, lies. This isn't just about getting even. This is about taking the crown. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Pussy Pact. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Initiation Night, Extended Version. You ever stare at a man after he's come and wonder how the fuck you ever let him inside you? That's what I was doing. Staring at Marcus, his name tattooed on my thigh like a dumb teenage memory. Except it wasn't his name, and I wasn't 17. I was a grown-ass woman playing a game I designed, and he was just another chess piece. Laying there, dead to the world, snoring like a busted muffler, mouth hanging open like he had something left to say. But he didn't. They never do. I slid out from under the sheets, grabbed his overpriced silk shirt from the floor, and padded barefoot through the condo. Every inch of it screamed insecure wealth, gray walls, black leather, art he didn't understand. I paused by his desk long enough to plug in the flash drive I'd hidden in my bra and clone his hard drive. That's the thing about these finance boys. They're smart enough to talk crypto over cocktails, dumb enough to leave their passwords on sticky notes. I tapped into the group chat. Done. Three little dots danced like they were holding their breath. Then the read receipts lit up. One by one. Tasha. Lexi. Simone. The baddest bitches I'd ever met. And also the ones who'd eventually fuck me over in ways that still keep me awake some nights. But that night, we were solid. We were gods. Let me rewind. You need to know why this all started. You need to know about him. David fucking Whitmore. My ex-fiancé. Trust fund baby with a closet full of secrets and a dick that wandered more than his eyes. I gave him 5 years. Built a life with him. A business. A home. And one night, I came home early from a networking event, walked into our bedroom, and found him balls deep in his assistant. She looked scared when she saw me. He didn't. He looked annoyed, like I was the one who ruined the moment. I didn't cry. I didn't scream. I broke his nose with a candle holder, then left the blood to dry on the Egyptian cotton. That was the night something inside me snapped. Not like glass. Not like something delicate. No. I snapped like a trap, sharp, violent, calculated. I didn't want revenge on just him. I wanted to hurt every man who'd ever smiled in my face while fucking me over behind my back. The idea came together slowly. Over whiskey and heartache. I started watching, noticing patterns. The way men hunted. The way they lied. I learned their tricks and started turning them inside out. That's when I met the others. Tasha was the first. We met at a charity auction for some bullshit tech startup. She wore a red dress so tight it looked painted on, and heels that could have sliced throats. I liked her immediately. She didn't give a damn who was watching. That night, she conned two VPs into bidding against each other for a date with her, then ghosted both and left with the event coordinator's Rolex. She called it emotional compensation. Lexi came next. We were seated next to each other at a panel on women in leadership, aka how to smile while being patronized. She didn't say a word the whole session, just typed furiously on her phone. Afterward, she told me she'd just shorted a hedge fund CEO's stock after sleeping with him and learning his company was about to collapse. I was in awe. She didn't just destroy men. She made money while doing it. Simone was the wild card. We found her at a private sex club in Brooklyn, dressed like a nun and straddling a married judge. When she joined us for drinks later, she told us she was a trained behavioral psychologist who got off on watching powerful men unravel. She never raised her voice. Never lost her cool. But her eyes, those soft doll-like eyes, carried enough darkness to scare a serial killer. We met again a week later in the back room of a Moroccan lounge that smelled like burnt honey and bad decisions. That's where the Pussy Pact was born. No contracts. No names outside the circle. Just a promise. To take back what was stolen from us by using the only thing men respected, pussy, power, and precision. Our first rule, never catch feelings. Second, never target a man someone else in the pact was working. Third, never speak of the pact to outsiders. Fourth, When in doubt, get receipts. That night, we did our first job together. A coordinated hit, you could call it. For men, for dates, for victims. Mine was Marcus. He had a thing for black girls and mommy issues, so I became both. I wore a silk robe and called him baby. He told me all his secrets while I rode him like a lie he couldn't escape. Back at my place, the girls started arriving one by one. Tasha came in first, dragging a duffel bag. Brought tequila. And guess what? I stole his motherfucking safe key. Bet he cries when he realizes he can't buy another Chanel bag for his side bitch. Lexi followed, cool and collected as always. Mine was begging me to meet his kids by the end of the night. Told him I'd think about it, then stole his Tesla fob. Simone was last. Quiet, glowing dangerous. He told me he loved me, she said, sipping from her wine like she hadn't just shattered a man's ego. So I told him I was pregnant. The room roared with laughter. We didn't laugh like women. We laughed like wolves. Like predators. Like gods. We sat in a circle on the hardwood floor, candles flickering, energy pulsing like sex magic. I poured shots. Lexi passed around burner phones. Tasha played a slow, seductive playlist in the background. We called it the Circle of Closure. But it was more like the opening of Hell's Gates. I looked at them, my sisters in sin, and felt something I hadn't felt in a long time, power. Not the kind that comes from money or titles. The kind that comes from knowing you've taken back the pen and started rewriting the story men tried to write for you. We toasted. To the pussy, I said. To the pact, they echoed. But I noticed something in Simone's smile that night. Something off. It was tight. Almost forced. Like she knew something we didn't. Like she'd already started rewriting her version of the story. And it didn't include us. Later that night, as I lay in my bed alone, listening to the city hum below me, I couldn't shake the feeling that something had shifted. That we'd opened a door we wouldn't be able to close. And that one of us, maybe the one with the softest voice, was already planning to slam it shut behind her. But that's the thing about betrayal. You never see it coming. Not until it's already inside the house. Chapter 2, Simone's smile. I didn't sleep that night. It wasn't the usual post-job high. The kind of wired adrenaline that comes after pulling off a perfect takedown. No, it was something colder. Something heavier. Like a warning crawling up the back of my spine, whispering a name over and over again, Simone. There was something in her smile the night before. It had all the right ingredients, perfect teeth, head tilt, a twinkle in the eyes, but it didn't land. It didn't feel like hers. And I've seen that girl smile through a dozen lies, through seduction, through chaos. I know her smile. This one, it was manufactured. A little too tight. A little too knowing. I told myself I was being paranoid. That maybe I was just tired. That maybe I was catching feelings for the very thing we swore to avoid. Control. Not the game, but the players. Not the men we played, but the women I played beside. And that was dangerous. The next morning, I stood on my balcony overlooking the East River, coffee in one hand, joint in the other, letting the cool breeze slap some clarity into me. The city was already screaming below, cars honking, sirens wailing, a couple fighting on the street corner like their pain belonged to all of Brooklyn. I stared at them for a second too long. The woman was crying. The man had his hands on his hips like he was tired. Not guilty, not even sorry, just tired. Like her heartbreak was an inconvenience to his day. That was the moment I knew I was still doing the right thing. Our next meetup was scheduled for Friday night at Lexi's loft. She only hosted when she was cooking something serious. Plans, not food. Lexi didn't believe in cooking. She believed in takeout, Chanel, and bringing men to their knees with legal precision. Her place looked like a magazine layout. Monochrome everything, glass tables, fur rugs. No photos. No clutter. No evidence of softness. I got there early. I always did. I liked watching the others arrive. Everyone's entrance told a story. Tasha showed up first, in ripped jeans and a mesh top with no bra, boobs bouncing like she gave zero fucks. She tossed her weave like it was part of the punctuation in her sentences. Y'all, I swear to God, I just finessed this club promoter into giving me half the VIP earnings for influencer exposure. Bitch, I got 1,200 followers and a burner account. He really thought I was somebody. She laughed so hard she dropped her vape. Men are so fucking dumb it's starting to feel like theft. Lexi was already pacing in heels that cost more than my rent, speaking into her earpiece, probably ending someone's career before appetizers. She snapped it off the moment Simone walked in. Simone, looking like something out of a noir film, black trench coat, slicked back bun, red lips that screamed danger. And quiet. Too fucking quiet. She floated in, kissed the air by each of our cheeks like some Parisian socialite, and sat down without a word. Not even a joke. Not even her usual, "Y'all hoes look tired" shade. Nothing. Just observation. And I watched her back. Lexi wasted no time. She pulled up the whiteboard she kept behind her bookshelf and started scribbling. Names. Targets. Notes. We've got new entries. CEOs. Influencers. Tech money. A hedge fund baby who's just ripe for the fall. She wrote his name in big bold letters, Dorian Keene. Simone cocked her head. Keene as in Keene Tech. Yep, Lexi said, popping her gum. 42. Divorced. Two kids he barely sees. Obsessed with dominance, according to the girls on Seeking Arrangements. I leaned in. Isn't he already being investigated for sexual harassment? Lexi smirked. Which makes him perfect. He thinks he's untouchable. Let's remind him he bleeds. Simone smiled, but it wasn't real. It was that same smile from the night before. The one that had haunted my chest like smoke. And then she said something that stuck in my throat. I can handle him. We all looked at her. Even Tasha stopped scrolling. Lexi raised an eyebrow. Since when do you take lead? Simone's tone was velvet. Since I studied his entire behavioral history and realized he has a thing for shy brunettes with trauma he can fix. I know exactly how to bait him. Tasha blinked. You already researched him? Simone shrugged. I like to be prepared. It was subtle. So subtle it almost slipped past us. But Lexi caught it too. The corner of her mouth twitched. Her poker face faltered for just a breath. Simone had gone off book. Researched a mark before we voted. Before we even assigned roles. That was against protocol. But no one said anything. Because the truth was, Simone had always been the one we underestimated. Quiet. Calculated. Gentle in a way that made men trust her. And women overlook her. But not me. Not anymore. I watched her the whole night. Every blink. Every half laugh. Every time she checked her phone and turned the screen away from the group. My gut was screaming something I couldn't quite translate. Not yet, but I knew better than to ignore it. Later, after we toasted, our usual ritual, I pulled Tasha aside. She's different, I whispered. Tasha smirked. Girl, we're all different. That's the point. No, I said, leaning in. She's playing something else. Something we're not in on. Tasha's smile faltered just enough to show she was listening. You think she's going rogue? I think she's already gone. We didn't say anything after that. Just looked at each other. Two women standing at the edge of something sharp. When I got home that night, I did what I never do. I checked Simone's socials. Not the ones we all used. Not her burner identity. Her real ones. The ones she told us she abandoned. And that's when the alarm bells stopped being metaphors and started screaming in my ears. Simone had a private LinkedIn page. Not much activity. Just one recent connection that made my blood run cold. Dorian fucking Keene. They'd connected 6 days ago. 6 days ago. Before Lexi brought his name to the board. Before our group had even discussed him. Before any of us knew he was on the list. And the message thread? Just one line from Simone, timestamped 3:02 a.m. I'm interested in learning more about your philosophies on leadership. Perhaps over dinner? That bitch made the first move. She didn't wait for us. Didn't plan it with us. Didn't bring it to the group. She'd already gone after him, and we were just her backup plan. Her smokescreen. The cover to make it look like we were all in on it. When really, Simone was playing her own game. I dropped my phone. My hands were shaking. It wasn't just about Dorian. This was bigger. Deeper. I didn't know what she was after, but it wasn't justice. It wasn't revenge. It was something else. Something uglier. I paced my apartment like a caged animal, heart pounding against my ribs like it wanted out. I didn't sleep. I couldn't. Because Simone wasn't just breaking the pact. She was about to burn it to the fucking ground. And I had no idea how far she was willing to go. Chapter 3, Bitch Move. I didn't just wake up the next day, I rose. And there's a difference. Waking up is for the blissfully ignorant. The kind of women who roll over, check their man's texts while he's in the shower, and pretend they didn't just see a heart emoji next to a name they don't recognize. Rising is for women like me. Women who know there's poison in the tea, sip it anyway, and use the venom to sharpen their tongues. I was already dressed by 6 a.m., black jeans, leather boots, and a cropped hoodie that clung to me like intention. No makeup. No lashes. Just wore paint. My real face. The one I used when I was hunting, not men, but truth. because Simone had lied. Lied with a calm, practiced ease like she'd been doing it her whole damn life. And now I needed to know what else she'd been hiding. I took a long drag of my joint on the fire escape, watching the city spit itself awake. Down below, a man in a navy suit yelled into his phone, pacing like the pavement owed him an explanation. I wondered who he was threatening. A coworker? An intern? A woman who finally told him she didn't give a fuck? Men always unravel the moment you stop pretending their mediocrity is impressive. I didn't head to work that morning. I called out, something I never do. But this wasn't a day for emails or clients or pretending to give a shit about quarterly earnings. This was a day for digging. First, I called in a favor from an ex-Julian, a cybersecurity analyst I once used as a side project until I realized he had real skills and even realer abandonment issues. Lucky for me, he still wanted to reconnect. I told him I needed discreet access to any aliases connected to Simone's IP. He hesitated. Why? Because I think my girl's lying to me. He chuckled. Is this about a man? No, Jules. It's about money. That got him moving. While he worked, I worked too. Went back through the last 6 months of our message threads, calendar invites, burner phone logs. Every interaction, every target, every little harmless deviation Simone had made. And it was all there, hidden in plain fucking sight. She'd been scouting Dorian Keane for months, subtly steering conversations, nudging us toward his direction, mentioning his company, his scandals, his taste for vulnerable girls, just enough to plant seeds. Back then, we thought it was intel, strategy, contribution. Now, I saw it for what it was, manipulation. She didn't want him on the list because he was a good mark. She wanted him on the list so she could get to him first. And the bitch did. By noon, Julian sent me an encrypted message with a file attached. Inside it, every fake name, every burner number, every whisper of Simone's digital shadow over the past year. She hadn't just messaged Dorian Keane on LinkedIn. She'd emailed his assistant, posed as a wellness coach, set up private sessions. Three meetings with our biggest target before he even hit our board. I sat at my kitchen counter in complete silence, phone in one hand, glass of bourbon in the other. No ice. Just burn. The kind that reminded me I was alive and angry. I thought about what to do. About telling the others. About calling an emergency meeting and putting Simone on blast. But I hesitated, because deep down I needed to know why. I needed to see how far she'd go. And more than anything else, I wanted to hear the lie from her lips. So I invited her to lunch. She agreed, of course. No hesitation. Still playing innocent. Still that same fake smile emoji in her text. We met at a rooftop cafe in Soho, bright sun overhead, clinking glasses, picture-perfect aesthetic for two bad bitches living soft life. I wore white linen and a smirk. She wore shades too big for her face, trying to hide behind expensive glass. "Girl, you look good," she said, sipping her sangria like her mouth wasn't full of betrayal. "Thanks. Been detoxing bullshit." She chuckled. "Aren't we all?" The waitress came and went. We ordered tapas, picked at shrimp skewers and truffle fries. It was all very civilized. Two snakes sharing a meal, waiting to see who'd strike first. I leaned back, arms crossed, voice light. "So, how's your new little project going?" She blinked, confused. Or pretending to be. "What project?" "You know, Dorian Keane." There it was. The twitch. The moment the mask slipped for half a second. She tilted her head. "Oh, that." Lexi brought him up. "We all agreed, didn't we?" "We did," I said slowly. "But you met him first." Silence. She lowered her glass, resting her elbows on the table like she was about to pray. Or confess. "All right," she said. "Yes. I met him before the vote. But only because I knew he'd be a good target. I wanted to make sure he was worth it." "That's not how the pact works," I said, eyes locked on hers. "We don't scout before we vote. We move together. You know that." Her voice dropped to a whisper. "You think I betrayed you?" I didn't answer. I didn't need to. She sighed, leaned forward, and said something I'll never forget. "You think this is still about the pact? About rules and rituals and toasts and secrets? But it's not. It never was. This is survival. And sometimes the game changes." I wanted to slap her. Not out of anger, but clarity. She wasn't confused. She wasn't desperate. She was evolving. And in that evolution, we'd become collateral. I stood up. Tossed a 50 on the table. "We'll talk soon," I said flat. She smiled again. That same fucking smile. "I'm always around." As I walked away, I knew we'd passed the point of no return. Back in the apartment, I called Tasha. Emergency meeting. My place. Now, bring Lexi. Shit, she said. What happened? I paused. Let the silence speak. She made her move. Chapter 4. Circle of Fire. When I say I was shaking, I don't mean the kind of trembling that happens after too much caffeine or bad sex. I mean my soul was vibrating. Like something inside me was banging on the walls of my ribs, screaming, "Do not let this bitch get away with it." I had the whole apartment scrubbed clean before they arrived. Not because I cared how it looked, but because I needed control. Needed the space to reflect me. Sharp, curated, unbothered. I lit my blackout candles, turned on the playlist we always used for strategy nights. Moody R&B, no lyrics, just bass and breath and tension. I wanted everything to feel familiar. But underneath the familiar was gasoline. And I was ready to strike the fucking match. Tasha showed up first, wild curls pinned up, fresh lip gloss gleaming like armor. She looked at me with that raised brow that always meant, "How bad is it, sis?" I didn't speak. Just handed her the burner phone and pointed to the screen. She read the messages, her expression darkening by the second. Then came the scroll through the IP report, the timestamped screenshots, the connection logs between Simone and Dorian. Her breath hitched. "Yo, this bitch been playing us like a side hustle." I nodded slowly. "She's been grooming this for months." Before the pact even touched his name, Tasha stared at the screen, jaw clenched. And she never said a fucking word. Lexi arrived 15 minutes late, like always. She hated being the first one anywhere. Said it gave people too much power to set the tone. But tonight, the tone was already boiling. The moment she walked in, I shoved the phone in her hand. She didn't speak for a full 5 minutes, just stood in my kitchen, reading and rereading the receipts like she was solving a murder. And in a way, she was. She went solo, Lexi finally said. "That's the cardinal sin. She went behind the family," I muttered. "That's death in any circle." Lexi leaned on the counter, her voice calm but cold. "We built this off trust. Off shared vengeance. And she just turned that into a fucking internship with the enemy." Tasha paced the room like a storm cloud, muttering. "How long's she been planning this? And why the fuck would she risk the pact over him?" I shook my head. "That's what I'm trying to figure out. It can't just be money. It's something personal." Lexi crossed her arms. "Or power. Maybe she's tired of the circle. Maybe she wants to be the circle." The room went quiet. That one hit too close. Because it made sense. Because it tasted like truth. We'd all seen it. How Simone started showing up late, but walking in like she ran the room. How she stopped sharing strategy and started keeping her plays close. How she smiled less, watched more. That's the thing about betrayal. It doesn't always arrive loud. Sometimes it's slow. Patient. A quiet corrosion that eats everything from the inside out. "So what's the move?" Tasha asked, finally stopping her pacing. "We exposing her?" Lexi shook her head. "Too easy. She'll play victim. Say she was just doing recon. She's good, remember? She's manipulative as hell, and she knows how to cry pretty." "Then what?" I asked. "We sit and wait while she builds her empire on our ashes?" Lexi looked at me. Hard. Cold. "No. We don't expose her. We outplay her." I leaned in. "Go on. We turn her game into a fucking trap. Let her think she's ahead. Let her believe we don't know. Then we build a mark around her. One she can't resist. One she needs to win. And when she takes the bait, we pull the plug." Tasha grinned. "You mean flip the script?" Lexi nodded. "Nah, bitch, we rewrite the whole damn book." And just like that, we became what she feared most, unified. Calculated. Vicious. We spent the next 5 hours laying out the plan like surgeons. Every detail mattered. We weren't just trying to catch her. We were crafting a spectacle. A slow, public unraveling that would humiliate her, isolate her, make her untouchable in any circle, any hustle, any future she thought she was building. We called it Project Widowmaker. Step 1, feed her a fake mark. A ghost client. One we invented. A tech billionaire with dark secrets and a taste for pain. Someone just dangerous enough to lure her in, but just fake enough to keep us out of trouble. We built him from scratch. Socials, job listings, shadow companies, photos. Julian helped. Tasha added dirt. Lexi wrote the script. I sewed it all together with the precision of a bitch with nothing left to lose. Step 2. Let Simone discover him accidentally. We dropped breadcrumbs. Planted whispers in chat threads she still had access to. Built fake text leaks from one of my burner exes. Simone was smart, but she was curious. Her weakness had always been ego disguised as intuition. Step 3. monitor her every move. We bugged her burner, tapped her private messages, set up alerts for any interaction with our ghost Mark. By midnight, it was live. Tasha poured shots. To us. Lexi raised her glass. To the real pact. I looked at both of them, my chest hot with rage and pride. To the bitch who forgot who made her. We clinked glasses. We drank. We laughed louder than we had in weeks. But underneath it all was a pulse of fury. A knowledge that this wasn't just about betrayal. It was about restoration. About putting the crown back on the heads of the women who built the kingdom. But even as we celebrated, I couldn't help the knot forming in my gut. Because if Simone had gone this far without flinching, if she'd betrayed us with a smile and a perfectly timed toast, then what else was she capable of? What wouldn't she do when she realized the trap we'd laid? Chapter 5, The Bait. I don't know if you've ever watched a snake slither into a trap you set, but it's not like the movies. There's no dramatic music, no slow-motion suspense. It's quiet, too quiet, and that's what makes it worse. You're holding your breath, waiting for the creature to realize it's fucked, but it never does. It keeps moving, confident, arrogant, smooth, right up until the second the cage snaps shut. That's what watching Simone was like. 3 days after we launched Project Widowmaker, she bit. It started with a late-night ping, an alert Tasha had set up on our dummy company's email inbox, a phishing tool disguised as a discreet business inquiry for high-profile clients seeking consultation and entertainment. It wasn't an outright message from Simone. She was too slick for that. No, it came from a burner. Brand new. Registered with an IP that pinged within 5 miles of her apartment in Crown Heights. The message was short. I have a client interested in exploring extreme discretion and mutually beneficial exchange. Heard your services were exclusive. Let me know if you're accepting private engagement requests. There it was. She was testing the waters. Playing third party. Like we wouldn't recognize the rhythm of her syntax. Like she hadn't used that same tone in every burner she'd ever handled. Lexi was the first to respond. Calm. Cool. Deadly. She crafted a reply under the alias Anya Devane, our fabricated client liaison for the Widowmaker Corporation. Client requests are considered on a case-by-case basis. Please provide more information regarding the nature of the desired engagement, preferred timeline, and risk threshold. Within an hour, Simone's burner responded. Fast. Too fast. Client has high net worth, reputation-sensitive background. Prefers submissive partners with emotional intelligence and the ability to maintain psychological control without visible dominance. Timeline, 1 to 2 weeks. Risk high. I read that shit 3 times. She was trying to describe herself. That wasn't a pitch. That was a resume. Tasha dropped her phone and howled. This bitch really out here trying to audition for a fake sugar daddy. I can't. Lexi just stared at the screen, emotionless. She's serious. She thinks she's about to run the whole operation. I said nothing, because under the laughter, under the shade and shots and snide comments, something felt off. Simone wasn't desperate. She wasn't clumsy. So why was she walking straight into something this elaborate without vetting it deeper? What did she see in the ghost we created that made her leap without hesitation? We needed answers, so we gave her more. Julian helped us push the bait further. Hired actors to create video calls, voice memos, even a social media trail. We paid a model to pose as Mr. Dorian Beck, a composite of every dark fantasy we knew Simone couldn't resist. Salt and pepper beard, leather gloves, a recovering dominant trying to explore emotional connections. We scripted his trauma, gave him fake therapy notes, crafted journal entries that dripped with vulnerability and red flags. And just like that, Simone was hooked. Within days, she was corresponding daily. She fell for him like a goddamn teenager, sending late-night voice notes, offering to fly out to screen the environment, hinting at her own fantasies like she was submitting a damn audition tape for an underground sex cult. I listened to one of the recordings alone in my apartment, bottle of wine in hand. Her voice was low, silky, trembling with fake vulnerability. There's something about men who carry sadness like a weapon. I feel safest when I know your power could destroy me, but doesn't. I nearly threw the wine glass across the room, because it wasn't just the line. It wasn't just the performance. It was that she meant it. She wasn't playing a role anymore. She believed in him, a man who didn't even exist. Tasha, Lexi, and I met in secret that night. No candles, no music, no wine, just silence, dim light, and truth. She's gone, Tasha said, voice raw. She's in this for real. Lexi nodded. and if we pull the plug now, she'll find out it's us. We have to finish it, I said. All the way. But something dark was brewing beneath the plan. Something none of us said out loud. We weren't just punishing Simone for betrayal anymore. We were building a stage to break her. Lexi wanted to ruin her reputation. Tasha wanted to strip her power. And me, I wanted her to feel it. The sting. The betrayal. The gut-wrenching collapse of something she believed in. The same way I felt when I found out she'd gone rogue. The same way we all felt when she smiled in our faces and plotted behind our backs. So we pushed the final phase into motion. Dorian scheduled a face-to-face meeting. A test of trust. A weekend retreat in a private upstate estate. A fake property we leased through a shell company with the help of Lexi's contacts. We even created an NDA. Custom. Legally binding. Ominous as fuck. Simone signed it. She didn't even blink. The final straw came the night before the trip. She messaged Dorian. I've never felt this clear before. It's not about control or revenge anymore. I think I finally know what I want. That line shook me, because I remembered saying something almost identical to David. The man who cheated on me and made me question my worth. The man who cracked me open and taught me that clarity is a lie we tell ourselves when we're desperate to believe in someone. Simone was desperate, and we were about to destroy the illusion that was holding her together. We met at the retreat estate early that morning, before she arrived. The actors were in place. Cameras were hidden. The plan was tight. Lexi took me aside. Once she's in, she won't be able to walk out without tripping 10 different red flags. It's airtight. Tasha adjusted her hoodie. We're really doing this. I stared at the house. At the fake luxury. At the lie we'd built from scratch. No, I said. She did this. We're just finishing it. And then the car pulled up. Simone stepped out, dressed like a lamb headed to slaughter. Soft beige trench. Bare face. Hope in her fucking eyes. She walked toward the house like it was her salvation. I stood behind the tinted window watching her. Heart tight. Hands shaking. Because suddenly, for just one second, I wasn't sure who the villain was anymore. Chapter 6. House of Glass. There's something eerie about watching a woman walk into her own downfall. Especially when she looks so fucking peaceful doing it. Simone didn't hesitate. Not once. Her heels crunched against the gravel driveway like every step was a choice she was proud of. Like she wasn't walking into a fantasy built to gut her from the inside out. She reached the front door of the estate, knocked once, soft, almost reverent, like she wasn't just seeking opportunity, but absolution. I watched her from the control room upstairs, eyes glued to the hidden camera feed, heart jackhammering behind my ribs. My chest was tight, my palms slick, and for the first time since launching Project Widowmaker, I felt something I didn't expect. Regret. Not the kind that paralyzes you. Not the kind that makes you reconsider. This was the cold, sharp kind. The kind that makes you feel everything at once but keeps your face still. Because even in the flood of second thoughts, I knew this had to happen. She crossed us. She played dirty. She broke the pact. And when you break the pact, you burn. Tasha sat beside me, chewing her cuticle, eyes darting between the monitors like a hawk. Lexi stood behind us, arms folded, silent, lips pursed so tight they were turning white. She's inside, Tasha whispered, pointing at monitor 3. Simone entered the living room, dim lights, velvet furniture, walls dressed in curated books and haunting oil paintings. All fake. All part of the illusion. She looked around slowly, like she was walking through a dream, fingertips brushing the edges of every lie we had built. Then he appeared. Dorian Beck, our actor, codenamed Vaughn, descended the staircase like a damn panther. Perfectly tailored suit. Black gloves. Silver beard trimmed to precision. Voice like silk soaked in gasoline. Simone, he said, extending a hand. You're even more striking in person. She blushed. Fucking blushed. And I broke. I stood up so fast my chair clattered behind me. I didn't mean to. I didn't plan to. But my body couldn't take it anymore. I can't watch this shit, I hissed. Lexi grabbed my arm. You have to. This is your plan, too. I didn't think she'd look so small, I whispered. Tasha stood. She made herself small, babe. That was her choice. Not yours. I wanted to believe that. God, I needed to. But watching Simone lower herself into that couch, tuck her legs under her like a girl on a date, smile like she still believed love existed, it twisted something inside me. Because I remembered being her. I remembered the softness before the rupture. The version of myself that trusted words, let men in, dreamed of safety. I remembered the exact moment that version of me died. and I realized I was watching Simone's version die right now. The conversation started harmless. Scripted. Tell me what you want from this, Simone. I want to explore surrender. Not the physical kind. The emotional. I want to feel seen. I can give you that. But only if you're honest. And she was. Too honest. She spoke about the pact. Not in detail, but enough. She told him she used to be part of a sisterhood. A group built on power and secrecy. She said they'd lost their way. That they forgot the why behind it all. That she was seeking something deeper. They became obsessed with the game, she said, voice low. I wanted to play for meaning. I froze. She wasn't lying. She was mourning us. Lexi leaned in toward the screen. Did she just say we lost our way? Tasha scoffed. She got some damn nerve. But I stayed quiet. Because what if she was right? What if we had lost the why? What if this whole vendetta became less about reclaiming power, and more about proving we still had any left? My stomach twisted. I turned away from the screen and stared out the window at the gray sky swallowing the trees. I couldn't breathe. Because for the first time, I saw Simone not as the villain, but as the mirror. And I hated what it showed me. Meanwhile, Dorian was escalating. Let me take you somewhere private, he said. Let me show you what it feels like to truly let go. She nodded. She fucking nodded. The second she stood, Tasha slammed her fist on the table. We pull the plug. Now. She's not breaking. She's falling. Lexi agreed. She's about to give him everything. I'm not trying to watch a breakdown. But I didn't move. Because I needed to know how far she'd go. And then it happened. Simone followed Vaughn into the candlelit study. He closed the door. They sat, face to face, in leather chairs like two spirits in confession. What are you hiding from me, Simone? She took a breath. Deep. Centering. Then leaned forward and whispered. I think I'm being watched. My blood turned to ice. Vaughn played it perfectly. What makes you say that? She looked straight ahead, eyes wide and still. Because everything feels too convenient. Too rehearsed. The invitation. The estate. You. I fell back into my seat. She knew. She fucking knew. Simone kept talking. I've been played before. I can smell it. There's something off about this. Off how? Vaughn asked, feigning curiosity. She stared straight ahead. Like a stage. And the audience isn't who I think it is. Lexi was frozen. Tasha's mouth hung open. She knew this entire time, she whispered. I stared at the screen, heart in my throat. And then Simone looked directly into one of the hidden cameras. Eyes sharp. Mouth soft. I hope you're watching, ladies. Because if this is your little payback tour, you better buckle the fuck up. She smiled. Not the soft one. Not the fake one. The real one. The predator smile. Simone stood up, walked to the fireplace, and pulled out a hidden camera we didn't even realize she knew about. She tossed it on the ground. Stomped it under her heel. The feed cut out. All screens went black. Tasha screamed. What the fuck? Lexi went ghost white. Abort. Shut it all down. Now. But it was too late. I sat in silence. Watching the last frame flicker, Simone's smile glowing like a lit fuse. She knew. She always knew. And we underestimated her. Not once. Not twice. But fatally. That night, we drove back to the city in silence. No music. No post-job high. No wine. Just defeat. Simone never called. Never texted. Didn't show up to any of our usual haunts. No social posts. No burner pings. Just silence. And that silence? It was worse than any scream. Because it wasn't a retreat. It was a warning. We tried to play her. But now. Now the game belonged to her. Chapter 7. Ashes and Aftermath. I didn't leave my apartment for 3 days. No wine. No men. No messages. Just shadows creeping up the walls and the echo of Simone's smile burned into the back of my eyelids. She knew. She always knew. And the moment those screens went black, she took the crown. The moment she crushed that camera under her heel, she became more than just a rogue member of the pact. She became the story we used to tell to scare ourselves. The one who outplayed the players. The one who turned the hunters into the hunted. The betrayal we thought we delivered. She rewrote it. Made it art. I laid on my couch in the same shirt I'd worn for 2 days straight, rewatching old footage from the pack's golden era. Back when it was just four women taking the city in silence. Back when our toasts were real and our laughs weren't hiding knives. Back when I believed we were untouchable. And now, we were bleeding. Tasha and Lexi were spiraling in their own ways. Tasha had gone off-grid, probably at her brother's spot in Harlem, chain-smoking and rage-texting men she hadn't fucked in years. Lexi buried herself in fake clients and legal paperwork, trying to sue some startup out of spite, just to feel control again. Me, I just sat in the dark, because I knew what was coming. Simone didn't vanish. She was waiting. And the worst part, she was smarter than all of us. See, we had the fire, but she had the fuse. We thought we had stripped her down, left her vulnerable. But what we actually did was trigger the final stage of her evolution. She wasn't trying to escape the pact. She was trying to replace it. It began on a Thursday. I was making coffee in my tiny kitchen, same chipped mug I'd used since college, when my phone buzzed. Unknown number. No message. Just a link. I hesitated, then clicked. And the moment the page loaded, my knees buckled. PXFEM, Elite Emotional Domination Consulting. Founder and director, Simone Wren. There she was. Full fucking glamour shot. Black suit. Blood red lipstick. Eyes locked on the camera like she could see through whoever was looking. The tagline underneath her name said it all. Power without apology. Control without chaos. Pussy with precision. She didn't just create a new identity. She built a fucking empire. The site was flawless. Bookings, testimonials, articles. She positioned herself as a feminist disruptor, a sensual strategist, a mentor for women who wanted to weaponize softness, a trainer for men who wanted to be reconstructed. It was like someone took the soul of the pussy pact, bled it dry, and repackaged it in a silk-wrapped box stamped with Simone's initials. And we weren't in it. No mentions of us. No trace of the group we built together. No credit. But that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was the testimonial section. Because there, buried in subtle language and poetic phrasing, were messages that exposed everything. Not directly. Not by name. But coded. Enough to connect the dots. Enough to hint at how the original pact fractured. Enough to paint us as the ones who broke her. As the villains. Tasha called first. Her voice was trembling. You seen it? Yeah, I whispered. Bitch used us as her origin story. Like we're the trauma and she's the phoenix. Lexi called next. Angry. Controlled. But barely holding it together. She's stealing clients. Mine. One of them canceled a $40,000 engagement last night and rebooked with her retreat. A fucking retreat, girl. She's franchising manipulation. That's when it clicked. She didn't burn the pact out of revenge. She burned it for marketing. She used our silence as her stage. Our pain as her pitch. Our history as her hype reel. Simone had turned betrayal into business. 3 weeks passed. Her name was everywhere. Podcasts. Panels. Viral quotes. Women who bleed don't need bandages. They need blades. People were eating it up. She was called the sensual CEO in Forbes. She was booked out 6 months in advance. And us, we became whispers, ghosts, shadows of something too messy to survive. Tasha wanted to confront her. Lexi wanted to sue. But me, I wanted to understand. I needed to look her in the eye. So I went to her, not as a sister, not as a member of the pact, just as a woman looking for closure. She met me in a penthouse lounge in Tribeca, high above the city we once carved our names into. She wore black on black, power heels, red nails, her hair slicked back like a weapon. I didn't say anything for a long time, just watched her. She smiled. Not fake, not sweet, just real. The kind you wear when you've already won. So, she said, you came. You planned this. I built this. I clenched my fists. We built it. Simone tilted her head, her voice soft and sharp all at once. You built a sisterhood. I built a legacy. I blinked hard. You burned us to the ground. No, she said calmly. You gave me the matches. I just lit them. You lied. You manipulated. You set us up. She leaned forward. And you underestimated me. You made me the sidekick. The soft one. The one who whispered instead of shouted. You don't get to call it betrayal just because I stopped playing by your rules. Silence stretched like a razor between us. I wanted to scream, but I didn't. I sat back. And I finally saw her, not as the friend I loved, not as the snake who slithered in silence, but as a woman who was always 10 steps ahead. She hadn't betrayed the pact. She had outgrown it. And that was the truth none of us could stomach. I walked out without saying goodbye. There was nothing left to say. Later that night, I stood on my balcony again. Same skyline, different scars. I thought about power. About loyalty. About the moment when friendship turns into competition, and how easy it is to cross a line you swore you never would. The Pussy Pact was dead, but its ashes were everywhere. In every woman Simone trained. In every man she broke. in every piece of me that still ached for the version of us that believed in each other. We started something together, but only one of us was ruthless enough to finish it. And I hated her for that. But more than that, I respected the hell out of her.